WABC Radio, WABC Sports, another edition of the MMA Report featuring, well, myself, Mike Guns Gunsman. As always, you can follow me on Twitter, The Gun Show. That is Guns with a Z. And you can always subscribe, give that 5-star rating and those reviews. Apparently, that's all the rage these days on the MMA Report on iTunes as well as Audio Boom, etc. But we're very stoked to welcome back to the show. He's he's a good dude. He's one of the storied voices in the MMA / wrestling world. He's been on in the past. We love him. His name's Brian Campbell. What's up, buddy? How are you, man?
Oh yeah, fired up to be back. Woo! On. Let's do it. Hey, can you kill this East Coast weather, the snow in March? Come on, I need some sunny days. Let's get talking about the fights coming up.
I am so depressed because I feel like it was only a couple years ago where I could go out on St. Patrick's Day in a t-shirt. But not this year, man. It's going to be like 30 degrees. What is that?
Well, you can't go out in a t-shirt. You can come home in a t-shirt because you might come home pantsless for all I know. I don't know how hard Guns is going to get down. You know?
I do have my own merchandise, not to brag or anything, but I have shirts that say The Gun Show, and on the back they all say Ballin', and I have green and white ones. So I'm set for St. Patrick's Day, man, so I think that very well could happen. But listen, Brian Campbell, he's part of CBS Sports, obviously the Cheap Heat. Podcast fans loved you, and you know, did some stuff at ESPN. You got your own podcast now called In This Corner, which is available on CBS as well. Brian, my man, how you doing? How's everything going though?
I'm doing really good. You know, covering three sports is a grind. There's always something going on, you know, and sometimes lately these three combat sports I cover are bleeding into each other.
Yeah.
You know, as we're talking Ronda Rousey, you know, with WWE, CM Punk, and UFC, it's a wild time as always.
And it's very exciting, which actually brings me to my first question, because I want to ask you about like the current state of, let's say, the UFC right now, because, you know, sometimes I see the numbers are up for attendance, and then other times they're getting rocked when for some of these cards, and then, you know, the bid to replace Fox potentially. I know the numbers aren't as high as they had hoped, but on the flip side, though, man, I feel like more of my friends and more people on Twitter and then social engagement are higher than ever before with the sport, or at least with UFC. What's your take on it, man? Where does the UFC lie right now?
They're in a very interesting, almost transitional space as we enter up on the 2-year anniversary of that, you know, absurd sale for $4 billion to WMEIMG. And you talk about selling high, right, in terms of, like, bringing in casual fans. 2016, UFC shattered all the pay-per-view records, you know.
Yeah.
They had Rousey, they had McGregor, they had Jon Jones. It was, everything was going great. The hangover from that was really severe. Last year for them, if it wasn't for that McGregor-Mayweather sort of fiasco where they really pocketed a lot of millions, this would have been an awful financial year with pay-per-view sales down. All those stars that I mentioned, you know, not even appearing in the octagon. So from a front page crossover celebrity type of way, they're in a tough spot right now in terms of reloading, finding those new stars. The stars that we thought might be next, the Cody Garbrandts, the Ioana Young Jacek's, you know, suffered defeats as well in the cage in 2017. So in that regard, there's a little bit of panic. I think that's why you're seeing a lot of, let's say, short-term decisions that have long-term implications in UFC's constant attempt to float interim titles, to match champion versus champion, which is things they didn't like to do in the past, just to try to get eyeballs on the product. But you know, Guns, sometimes that these narratives sometimes seem more severe than they actually are. In reality, UFC is reloading. There's a, you know, group of young fighters coming back up, and we do know that the day McGregor does decide to go back in, it's going to be front page news. It's probably going to lead to a stream of big fights coming after that.
And I completely agree with you about the champion versus champion or the super fights, which I'm just, it's cliche, or it feels cheap, I guess. You know what I mean? It feels like you're taking something away. But on the other side, it's like, hey, they, like you mentioned, you need the eyeballs. Do you think long term, though, it's good? I just don't. Like, another thing is, like, there's too many women's divisions. I think there's...
There's way too many. There's too many divisions. There's too many titles. So UFC's got to pretty much figure out who they are and who they want to be right now, because they built that foundation of the best are going to fight the best no matter what. And that was so counter to what boxing was doing. And that's why so many angry boxing fans were coming over to the UFC because it was saved by three guys who were ex-boxing fans, you know, Dana White included, who were seeing all the things not happening in that sport and saying, how can we apply it to this new sport? Mm. But they've slowly gone away from that once they got that taste of that big TV money, the big pay-per-view money. Once they found
they sold out, man. They sold.
These fighters could become real stars, right?
Yeah.
Now, like I said, in this hangover period, they got to decide what their model, their motive really is. Is it going to be more crossover celebrity type stuff, CM Punk in the cage, you know, do whatever we can to make money? Or is it going to be go back to the basics and let organically these stars create for themselves and the big fights create for themselves? I think there was that point where Dana White said, this is going to be the fifth major sport. And I think that the numbers started to back up, that they got a little bit too ahead of themselves. And that big TV deal, which funds their pockets, and, you know, the new deal is going to be up, like you mentioned, that also created the oversaturation of way too many cards. Some, you know, sometimes twice a weekend they've got cards, and I think that's a big part of this. Maybe people, they're not sick of the UFC. They just want to be how it used to be 5 years ago, where you turn on a card and it's all killer, no filler, all the time.
Ain't that the truth? As we speak here with Brian Campbell, you can follow him on Twitter at what is it? It's B Campbell CBS.
CBS, yeah.
There we go, perfect. Off the top of my head, how about that for memorizing something or remembering something? But you're exactly right, and let's delve into some of these cards because we all have UFC 223. I want to get back to that, but. You know, you got UFC 224. You know, Nunes is obviously going to win. You know, it'll be good to see, like, Vitor face Machida and good to see Vitor on, you know, send-off, the proper send-off, because obviously he didn't get the last one. But but the rest of the card is kind of – it's weak right there. And, you know, UFC 225, they began dropping. You know, it's going to be – that one's so much better already. But, like, 224, what's it really giving us? You know?
Well, I'm almost going to counter you and say 224 looks a lot better than a lot of the pay-per-views we saw the second half of last year. I mean,
okay.
They were becoming like boxing last year, where you're buying the pay-per-view for the main event and you're getting almost nothing else to go with it. At least 224's got four fights I pretty much want to see. I mean, there's something there at least, right?
Okay, but do you think 225, though, is better than 220? Like, I think the Nunes one is just like, it's almost a given, like that she's going to almost get it, you know?
I mean, that's still a tough matchup. I mean, you know, Pennington has a lot going against her in the fact that she's been off for more than a year. She's coming off what seemed to be a pretty serious leg injury in that free cutting accident. So there's some questions to be answered, but she's still a tough out. I've got no problem with that matchup. I just think that, you remember, I hate to always reference 2016, but how much they gratuitously overloaded four of those major pay-per-views where they had fights, you know, going on at like 8 p.m. Eastern at the second fight of the night with nobody in the crowd. That would have been the co-main on
right.
any other pay-per-view that
exactly.
year. And I still think they're recovering from that, you know, and that's over a year ago. I still think they're recovering from loading up way too many in a short time, where now they have a problem filling out across the board.
And you're exactly right. And also, to bring up wrestling for an extent, it's like, you know, I wasn't a big fan of the three-hour Raws, you know, because I think it just, you know, it cheapened away the actual pay-per-views. The fact that WrestleMania now goes for 14 hours, you know, like with the pre-shows and everything. But it's kind of, you know, when you have two, every single week there's another UFC event, which is fine, or at least an MMA event, which is fine, but you are oversaturating perhaps an audience out there that, you know, maybe would, that would go to the bar to watch it or be able to tune in or just focus that much more on it if it wasn't constant.
For sure. And that can go away when you have those big stars.
Yeah.
Okay, that can go away. That narrative, that feeling can go away when you're always looking forward to that next big fight. And at least to their credit, when I do look at the schedule ahead of us for the next 6 months, there are fights I want to see. The main event of 225, you know,
yeah, that's gonna be awesome.
The rematch for the middleweight belt, I really want to see that. 226 with the heavyweight super fight with Miocic and Cormier, you really want to see that.
Yeah.
So like I said, you package that with a McGregor comeback, you know, we got something going here for the long haul.
And 225 has obviously that, but it's also got the return of CM Punk. I don't have a problem with this because I think, you know, when Mickey took him out, I think Punk had a terrible game plan in the beginning, just ran right at him, and he got, you know, like a bull running at the guy at the matador or whatnot, and Mickey just took him down and defeated him so quickly. I think you got to give Punk at least one more shot in the octagon.
Well, do you, though? That's the question, because these type of fights were what the UFC never wanted to be about. These carnival, almost Bellator MMA-like fights, right? Like, they did one with James Toney and Randy Couture that time, but they almost did that as, like, an example. Like, let's end for good these trash-talking boxers who say they can just walk into the cage and have their way. And it was, like, their way of showcasing that. They're not really about that. And I think they only signed CM Punk at a time in 2014 when injuries and canceled shows had sort of piled up, and they were just in the need of some good headlines and some good celebrity crossover. And I think at that time they were thinking, we can use this guy as a personality, but you know what happened next. He didn't appear in the cage for 2 years because of injuries and setbacks.
Yeah.
And I think even Dana White in those interviews after CM Punk's loss, he wasn't even sure if it was a good thing to bring him back. But I think the alternative of cutting him loose would have just meant he was going to go across the street to Bellator because he still wants to do this thing.
Right.
And it just comes down to this. My eyeballs are going to be on it, right? I mean, I'm cheap to that type of thing. I'm an easy mark. I'm going to watch it no matter what. But does this guy really deserve to be in the octagon, which used to hold sort of a reverence around it, that even Brock Lesnar, they were going to match him tough if he wanted to come over? There was no softies. The rumor is that he's going to fight Mike Jackson,
right,
you know, a part-time MMA journalist, the guy who doesn't have many pro fights, who just lost in less than a minute to the guy who just destroyed CM Punk. So
right,
what are you doing to your own reputation by even booking this match?
I understand that, but I feel that it can go on the flip side as well, the fact that, listen, if Punk gets rocked again, then be like, yo, the UFC is for real. MMA is for real. Octagon is for real. You know what I mean? That, listen, this is two losses. He got smoked in both of them. Like, you know, this isn't for the faint of heart, and you can't just jump into the octagon type thing. So I think it can work to their advantage to be like, because Punk got embarrassed the first time, but like, hey, man, it's a lot harder than you thought it was. Now, if he loses again, I just think he needs you give him another shot. That's all. I mean, I know it is for the big name, et cetera. It is Punk, but I think it can also work to their advantage. And just, you know, if he gets smoked, then it's like, hey, dude, it's harder than you thought. And for everybody.
Yeah, and the advantage is that he's going to bring ratings in a certain, you know, probably a couple hundred thousand pay-per-view buys just for being on the show. And if you listen to everybody in his camp, and obviously he's in a legitimate camp with Duke Rufus in Wisconsin, they're saying he's 200% better than he was in that first fight. So, hey, with all that disclaimer I gave you, I'm still going to be there watching.
You'll be there. Hell yeah.
Don't think we're not saying to ourselves, are they really crazy enough to try to get Punk a win so they can put him in there with Mayweather? Because there's got to be some justification why Floyd Mayweather won't stop talking about fighting in the UFC when anybody who's followed his boxing career knows there can't be any truth to this.
And that brings me to the next question, because I hated the Mayweather-McGregor thing. I thought, I can say it now, people had told me months in advance. I had Weidman on here. He told me months in advance on the air, and then it made TMZ Sports that it was a done deal, that it was being signed and everything. They just kept, you know, they kept, tried keeping it under the wraps, and they did a good job as long as they could, but it was almost like the most talked about secret out there. But, dude, I don't want Mayweather going to the UFC or to the Octagon. Like, come on.
So I want it to die, but it's not dying. I mean, even the interview he gave to TMZ yesterday, which sort of restarted this talk, I mean, there's a lot of sincerity in his face, and I've seen a lot of Floyd interviews, right? That seemed as sincere as anything, but it doesn't make a lot of sense why he's going to
seek out Tyron Woodley. You're talking about a gimmick, man. Come on. That is such a gimmick, dude. I think that would piss off so many people if Mayweather comes here. It's one thing with Punk, but Mayweather? Come on.
Well, the worst part about that is if this is real and if he is planning a fight, and whether it would be a carnival CM Punk fight or not, you know there's going to be some type of asterisk around it, some type of modified rules. And again, you're watering down your product
exactly
so bad just for the sake of really putting yourself out there for ratings. And we already heard all of the conspiracy rumors that came off of Mayweather-McGregor, the boxing match,
yep,
that it was fixed and set up just by the way some of the things were handled. I'm not saying I believe that, right? It's Floyd's style to give up early rounds. And maybe he also was making sure that McGregor isn't better than he thought he was, right? He was doing his homework. He was okay. He was watching it. But at that same time, a lot of people watched that fight and said that was fixed.
Yeah.
Well, how fixed are they going to think it is if Floyd gets in some kind of modified ruled MMA match for billions of dollars and somehow wins it? Like, I'm not saying this is going to be 1919 Chicago wiped Black Sox scandal, but these are not things that are good for the sanctity of the sport.
Absolutely. Completely agree with you, and we'll love to have you back on when we get more info on that. UFC 223, just a couple weeks away, though. It'll be at Barclays. I'll be there. You'll be there as well. You know, we're finally getting Khabib and Ferguson, obviously a fight that we all wanted to see. You know, Khabib is turning out to be the badass that we all thought he was, and some of us knew he was going to be. Tell me what you think about this fight. You think it's a solid card?
I think this card is fantastic, and on paper, this fight, I mean, you know, the fourth time UFC's trying to put it together, but hopefully the fourth time will be the charm, because there's not a better fight you can book on paper. Seriously, in the company, there's fights that'll sell more, there's fights that'll get more people excited for the guys that can talk that are in the main event, but this fight on paper is incredible. Yes. Nurmagomedov being unbeaten, I mean, I say it as a joke, but he doesn't come in there to wrestle you, he comes in there to take your soul against almost a sadistic striker in Tony Ferguson, who loves pain and is willing to endure it to get closer to you to finish you off. I mean, this could be an epic train wreck in all the right proportions, right? Like two runaway trains colliding there, and a lot at stake in that lightweight title. But as much as we have in our head that Conor's going to be there cage side, and he may very well be, and I think he should be, but I think we are imagining this scenario where he's just going to walk into the cage and shake the hand of the winner, and then where he's going to fight him. Where I think that's a little bit of a reach when you consider Conor's options financially for him right there. Why would he want anything to do with either of these guys, considering the big money?
He'll get rocked. Considering
the big money he has earned for fighting less dangerous fights. So at the same time, the Conor shadow is going to loom large, and Dana White has said the second these two guys walk into that cage, Conor will be stripped. This fight will be for that full title. These two are top 10 pound-for-pound guys. I mean, the winner is going to really be able to call himself one of the best in the entire sport.
Absolutely, and it's going to be brutal. It's going to be a battle for sure. I'm glad that they are stripping Conor of the title because, man, you got to man up. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man up. Even though he does have plenty of money, but, we heard the Frankie Edgar thing. I had Frankie in here. Frankie was like, I heard those rumors, but, you know, whatever. I'm just focusing on my match. Okay, Frankie, but unfortunately, that sucked that he ended up losing. But I think you had to strip Conor, both of them, get back in there. But I could see him facing, like, Diaz or somebody. He's not going to go face one of these guys in his first match back in 2 years. You know?
No, look, let's be real with ourselves. No one had leverage against the UFC. Randy Couture tried, and they basically blackballed him. McGregor got to a point and deserved and earned getting to that point where he has more control over his future than no one has ever had. He's got 100 million reasons, as we say, to do whatever he wants. And with UFC being so desperate right now for pay-per-view buys, I feel like there's no way they could stand in unless they're going to offer him the kind of money he really wants, the kind of money they've never given anybody. Why would he go in there for even 15, 20, 25 million against the winner of this match when he can make that same against Nate? He could make five times that or four times that, whatever, if he wanted to rematch for Floyd Mayweather in a boxing match, right? Like, we know that. I think it's really Nate or bust. But we do see Conor back probably later this fall. I really see, unless they can speed up some type of GSP super fight that really would break the UFC pay-per-view records, I'm assured of that. This is really, why else would it be anybody else than Nate?
And do you give Rose a chance? I mean, Joanna's going to come out, and I just see her just freaking out.
Oh, I said, that main event is the best fight on paper. I'm almost as intrigued in this co-main event.
Me too, dude. Me too. Do you give Rose a chance? I mean, God, dude, that was wildness when that pay-per-view at the Garden was insane. Three title changes. Are you kidding me? In one night, but the Rose one, nobody gave Rose a chance, man. Nobody even talked to her at the pre-fight press conference. She got one question. Nobody cared about her. Damn.
Well, it's funny. She won the fight, by winning the mental battle, right? By basically doing things by not taking Joanna's intimidation, by walking
she didn't
right
take the
through
bait.
That.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, she also won the fight by evolving her striking. I mean, under coach, Trevor Whitman, she showed the type of boxing that she's never had before. When she first came on the scene, we thought she'd be the next Rousey. At least that's what UFC wanted to market her as. And it was that ability to just slip somebody into a crazy submission and end the fight. Now, she's really evolved, and she seems mentally tougher than she's ever been at any point in her life. So do I give her a chance? I install her as the favorite, right, personally, because I think for young Chacek, she just doesn't have to prove that this is not a fluke. She's got to prove, why she got dropped twice in that fight and why this was a style that gave her so much trouble. And I think that what cutting to this weight has always been a problem for Ioana, and she talked about the horrors of this previous of this most recent weight cut and how much she had to do at the last minute. I mean, we all know she's long for 125 in the long run. I think the jury's still out that she can come back and be that same destroyer against somebody who mentally and physically has one up on her right now.
The mental game, absolutely huge for a mental advantage, I should say, for Rose. I just see Ioana just being like, F this, and just going at it. You know what I mean?
Well, she's that chick.
Yeah,
you know, I like to
she
say,
is a badass.
Is that dude. She's that chick who can just is so grimy in the right ways, right? In the cage, like, she lives the gimmick when she's in there. She's that crazy. And by the way, that was a big part of why she lost that fight, because she found somebody who wasn't going to take that bait, like we said. But yeah, I would not be surprised, as much as I just installed Rose as the favorite. If you want to,
Campbell, you're all over the place. Come on, man, what do we got?
Really, I mean, because she is that fighter. But yeah, I think she's got an uphill battle, which is very interesting, because we don't see her in this. She's been the front runner,
dominant,
you know, from the beginning.
Absolutely. Speaking of Brian Campbell, B. Campbell, CBS, he's got a podcast. It's called In This Corner, In This Corner CBS. You can check it out. It's one of the best ones out there for sure. The guy knows his knowledge. He's been doing this for years and knows the history, but as well as, you know, has some hot takes, as the kids call them these days as well. Real quick, WrestleMania, less than a month away from now. You have almost every belt on the line, it seems. You know, obviously Brock will be out, so Reigns will win that, unfortunately. I don't know if The Miz continues on with his winning streak. I think they might let him. But overall, what do you think about this year's WrestleMania?
You know, it's really started to get me fired up in, like, the past week plus, especially that Fastlane SmackDown final pay-per-view that was awful on paper coming in. I felt like that overachieved. It ran into another red-hot Raw this past week. When you look at what's on paper now and you look at what we think will close out this card, this is good. This is a good card. This is an exciting card. There is a lot to like on there, and I think way too many people are looking past what we may get in that Roman Reigns-Brock Lesnar match, because not only has the build been really interesting the past few weeks because of the whole work shoot angle that they're working in, but guns, tell me, WrestleMania 31, that memorable main event that we remember so much for what Seth Rollins did, are you with me? We got to remember what Brock and Roman did for those first 15-plus minutes, because that was some intense physical stuff going on in there, and I see no reason why they can't give us that same level of main event.
I honestly, those are my two least favorite wrestlers. I can't stand Brock. I can't get rid of Brock faster from the WWE. And Reigns, I mean, it's almost like some things in politics. It's like, well, Trump's our president, just deal with it. It's like, well, Reigns is going to be there no matter what. Vince won't let him go away. Perhaps we should just deal with the fact that he's not going anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, over and over again.
You know,
I
see a lot of hate for Brock. And obviously WWE's trying to spin the storyline now for people to hate Brock if they don't already. But, look, I said this on my podcast, that I think it's misdirected. I think people should be hating Vince for how he allows Brock to be handled. Brock can show up for Raw when he has very little appearances on his contract, do a 5-minute skit in the beginning where he doesn't even say a word or touch anybody, and then be done for the night, not appear on the broadcast again. I think this is a little more of a Vince problem than a Brock, because when Brock's dialed in and he's in a feud that matters and a storyline he can get involved with, as we saw in that one-off against AJ Styles late last year, he can still bring it. And I don't want people to be that quick to dismiss or blame him when, hey, Vince, you got to control your boy.
Right. I mean, he's only doing what he's allowed to do, and Vince gave him the everything.
He gave him the green light, as Pitbull would say last year's WrestleMania.
Real quick, because obviously went a lot longer than we were supposed to. I'll edit that part out, but I'm just saying thank you for it, dude. I appreciate it going longer than I had originally told you. But, you know, the conversation's been flowing. Back to recording. Here we go. Real quick, Ronda Rousey, of course. Do we care? I mean, dude, she's got no mic skills whatsoever. You know, it's not like she's going to be dropping Stephanie. It's not like it's going to be a battle in there, really. I mean, you know, she might do two moves, perhaps. But this is obviously the build-up. They had to do a tag match for it to get her ready. I mean, to eventually fight, you know, in the women's division. Do you think it's going as well as the WWE anticipated?
I don't know. I don't, actually. I don't, because I think she's not carrying her weight on the mic. And
not
some of that might be setting her up to fail, because, look, she was a heel in MMA, right? She put out there a very shtick-heavy WWE-like personality as a heel to psych herself up. And I know, of course, there were times where she was America's darling and she was the face of you know, this revolution in women's sports in general, and that's true. But when she got shticky, it was heelish. And now they're trying to make her the All-American Golden Girl, and it's not working. And I think the worst byproduct from that, and the last time Ronda was on the screen, we saw that, is the experienced performers around her who are there to help her and carry her up are almost overacting to compensate for the fact that Rousey is not operating on a level that she should. Now, at that same time, she's done very little physically, and I think physically, if she's going to impress you, even if you're her biggest critic right now, is where she'll have that chance to impress you, because her background is judo, right? She learned how to take bumps from a very young age. I think physically, if they let this match become an actual match, she's going to show us a little more than we think she can do. I think, though, in the meantime, when they do use her, they got to use her in spots where she can talk trash and give you that Rousey face, not be in there and be the victim.
Right, and not be this all-American sweetheart type thing. We're talking Ronda Rousey here. Nobody wants that. You know what I mean? You've already forced her upon us to begin with. She's got to be able to defend herself or at least make a name for herself. And will WrestleMania, will this matchup allow her to do that? I mean, I'm sure she'll get one or two big spots to be like, oh yeah, I'm a badass again. But I don't know. It's been painful. It's been cringeworthy to see her up there, dude. The last couple
of weeks. It has. You know, I thought some of the build has worked. Angle has been doing well. The story on paper is not bad, right? But I think you have to ask yourself, doing a mixed tag team right now, as opposed to putting her out there against an established name, which really would be, you know, putting her right into the fire right away with no experience, does that show that they don't have a lot of belief in her overall? Right. Or, you know what I mean? Or does that show that they're really using her and using her name for this to be their big celebrity crossover hook for WrestleMania this year? It's an interesting debate, just like it's interesting to see how long will she last as a full-time performer. Is she going to catch on right away and be great at this, and this is what she does for the next 5-10 years, or not? You know, I think that's as interesting to see. Will the crowd turn on her? Because let's not forget, when she suffered those two knockout losses in UFC and took a year off in between and really wouldn't do interviews, and when she did do interviews, talked about things like suicide, people kind of turned heel on her. Absolutely. So I think that they're lucky that the live crowds at least have embraced her, but she's going to have to perform up to a level where they want to continue to do that.
There it is, Brian Campbell. Thank you so much. WrestleMania less than a month away. Then we've got, of course, UFC 223 a couple weeks from now, and followed by 224, which you love. I'm not happy about the card, but 225 I think is sick. And it's Brian Campbell from CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter. It's B Campbell CBS. He's got the In This Corner CBS podcast. Thanks for joining the MMA Report, man. Always good talking with you, man. Let's keep in touch. And obviously, I'll see you at 223 in the Barclays Center. But good stuff, dude. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you. Anytime, man. Great chat with you.
Cool.